Welcome to Habitual Excellence, presented by Value Capture. This podcast and our firm is all about helping you and your organization achieve habitual excellence via one unifying focus, one value-based structure, and one performance system. In other words, it's about helping you capture dramatically more value through achieving perfect care and perfect safety for patients and staff. To learn more about Value Capture and our services, visit www.valuecapturellc.com. Hi, welcome to Habitual Excellence. I'm Mark Graben, and today's episode brings us Ken Siegel as a guest. He is CEO of Value Capture, and we're going to be talking about two different things today. First off, I want to tell you about, this is actually going to be the first webinar that Value Capture is hosting, so we're really excited about that. It's going to be held Thursday, May 27th at 11 Eastern Time, and it is titled Habitual Excellence Starts with Safety, Before, During, and After a Crisis. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that webinar. First off, Ken, let me say thank you for joining us on the podcast. Once again, you did it a while back, and I'm glad you're here with us. How are you?
Thanks, Mark. I'm doing great, and I'm always excited to share learnings that we've had with some of our partners and to talk with you.
When you talk about crisis being there in the subtitle of the webinar, Ken recently published a blog post on the Value Capture website at valuecapturellc.com. The blog post is titled Hospital Command Centers, Keep What's Best and Improve the Rest. So when we're in crisis mode, a command center often pops up. And so I think we'll talk about that. But first off, you know, with the webinar, yeah. I'm going to be playing a little bit of a host role. Ken is going to be the moderator with our two guests. So Ken, let me turn it to you. And if you want to share a little bit about those guests and why you invited them to be part of the webinar.
Yeah, so we're excited about the topic because we think it is so foundational to excellence at any point. And this webinar is in partnership with the Leapfrog Group and our folks there. And so Missy Danforth, who's the vice president for healthcare ratings at Leapfrog, will be with us to just share a little bit about their survey and their process and sort of as an anchor for safety driving excellence. But our other special guest is Mike Bundy, who is the CEO of two hospitals within the Prisma Health System in South Carolina. And Mike has not only led one of their campuses all the way to top hospital status in just 2 years. Mike came a year before the pandemic hit, and the others moving up as well. But he really exemplifies leadership that makes safety a precondition, sort of the key to everything else in terms of excellence. And he does it in a completely straightforward, common sense, common language way. You know, one of the things he talks about when he does, when he talks about these things, is sometimes process improvement or PI can get sort of lost in process improvement and PI. And leaders and operators, what he calls operators, the people running the institutions, sort of lose sight of the fact that continuous improvement focused on the core things that they have to do to deliver for patients and to deliver for the people who deliver for patients is really the core of their job. And he just helps everybody see how it all fits together in a way that is very clear, often fun, and produces great results in a way that is very supportive of people while standing for excellence. So, known Mike for 16 years now. First met him when he was chief operating officer at a different system, and he's had several top leadership posts and helped produce incredible results at each spot. So we're excited to bring Mike and his common sense, practical, effective leadership together with the Leapfrog platform and help everybody think about excellence together.
And I think it's going to be great to combine their perspectives. Like you said, we're going to hear from Missy. And then, you know, I think the bulk of the time is going to be you moderating discussion with Mike. And then we'll have Q&A at the end that everybody can participate in. But to recap, the one thing I hear you saying, Ken, is this process improvement work sometimes gets lost or delegated or both within a silo, as opposed to being leader-led, as we believe so strongly at Value Capture, that leader-led transformation is really the key. If you have a little more you can share about that.
Right. So we do believe it's the key. We know it's the key. So if you look at places where performance not only gets to the highest level, but stays there and stays there long beyond the time of the leader, it's because the leaders didn't make improvement a separate set of projects added onto everyone's day, but helped everybody see how it became part of the work, starting with their own. And Mike, who is a former officer in the Airborne Rangers, when you hear a few of his stories, you sort of absorb the sort of frontline focused leadership, thinking about the systems that need to be in place to make that building quality and improvement into the work true, in a very concrete, I don't want to say simple, because it's not simple, but in a very concrete, integrated way. And it is a breath of fresh air, because so often our mental models are that this is extra work that bogs us down, et cetera. But we know that it's the leaders who use, you know, fundamental principles to organize everyone, to improve everybody every day together, that produce the sustainable results everybody's looking for. And, you know, and to that end, I just add the point, this is not about making improvement somehow successful or work. This is about making leaders successful, because it's the metrics of the organization corresponding with success in serving the community and patients in their own workforce and the sustainability of the enterprise that we're talking about. So this is not leaders being nice to those they care about quality improvement. This is about leaders succeeding themselves.
And it's leaders kind of bearing the mantle. Is that the right way of saying it? Of kind of not delegating, but leading the charge when it comes to talking about perfect safety. You know, you've talked about this. I'll link to previous episodes, Ken, where you were talking about habitual excellence and the need for setting goals at zero, or the theoretical limits of performance. Mike shares that mindset, right?
Right. Absolutely. And when we fall short, and when we do get a problem, is it surfaced right away? And what do we learn from it so we can prevent that cause from happening again? And by the way, because it might happen to somebody across the hospital or in another ambulatory center in the system, how fast can they learn, you know, from your experience as well? So absolutely. Well, you mentioned leaders sort of setting those goals and modeling the way. And, you know, that is so much a part of it, is them taking, you know, direct parts of their day to touch and make sure the system is working, and showing the value they put on these behaviors and, you know, the value being created at the front line. And so you'll get to hear some of Mike's stories about how he has demonstrated that. And I'll just give a hint, you know, you'll be surprised who did the first 40 quality improvement trainings to the entire management team at his hospitals when he took over at Prisma Health.
And that's great to hear. That's somewhat rare, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's a rare bird, but again, it's but not that rare. That, you know, the great leaders that produce enduring change have some commonalities of approach. And Mike's a great example, and we look forward to you know, having him share some of his stories and journey and results, so that others who are struggling, you know, with this feeling of extra burden and extra work and, you know, feeling like, you know, surveys are extra, you know, how do you put it together in a package that is animating and energizing to everybody and helps them feel that they are fulfilling their human purpose in a deeper way and helps them feel great about being successful, you know, including in times of pandemic. So I think that's what we're really trying to, you know, that aspirational sense of creating something that's enduring together. Mike and his team, and he'll be the first to credit his team, are great examples of that.
Well, I'm really looking forward to what we're going to hear from Mike in the webinar. And again, we're also Mike Bundy, CEO of two hospitals within Prisma Health. We're going to be joined also by Missy Danforth, as we mentioned, VP of Healthcare Ratings for the LeapFrog Group. The webinar is being held live Thursday, May 27th, 11 a.m. You can register at valuecapturellc.com/webinars, and I'll also put a link, a direct link to the registration in the show notes. And I would encourage people, if you're listening to this after May 27th, you'll be able to go view the recording on our website or on the Value Capture YouTube channel. If you're afraid you won't be able to attend live and you're hearing it before the 27th, please register. We'll send you a link to the recording so that everyone can hear these perspectives. But of course, if you tune in live, you'll be able to submit questions and be more interactive with us.
Mark, could I just make a point about that? So, you know, this one will be, you can access after. We hope you'll join us live, access after, but just the library of podcasts that you've been putting together with some of the great leaders and practitioners across healthcare, really standing for excellence and supporting people at this time when people need such desperate support, is really a remarkable. It really is a library and one that will endure. And you know, if I were trying, you know, we're always continuously learning, but if I was really early in my career and wanted to think deeply about issues of leadership and what the path was, you've helped create a remarkable set of resources and multiple perspectives with some converging themes, but really equipping leaders to do what's possible with shared information from others. So thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you. It's very, very kind of you. And we've had a lot of really great guests on the podcast. So if you are listening for the first time, please check out the library of past episodes. And you can find it all in the podcast feed or the app where you're listening now, or you can go to valuecapturellc.com/podcast to find a link to all of that. So there's the podcast, and then there's the blog. There's also a lot that people can find and read on the Value Capture blog. So Ken, maybe we'll transition and talk a little bit about your post on command centers and crisis operations. You know, the subheader of the piece I think is interesting. It says your crisis operations system or command center, whatever we want to call it, it works because it breaks through what doesn't work in normal operations. So I was wondering if you could just sort of elaborate a little bit on that point. Like there's a time and a place for this crisis mode, perhaps, or why and when do organizations kind of go to this structure?
Yeah. So Mark, thanks for asking. And, you know, the general topic fits, you know, for many of us in that the COVID crisis has forced many more health systems toward some behaviors and structures and processes that actually could be very beneficial if the right elements of them were continued. So some of the things that, you know, those of us at the leading edge of the improvement movement and enduring excellence, you know, wish that more leaders had tipped over into COVID sort of forced a fair amount of that to happen, right? And I think the critical thing for leaders and that we're the vision we're trying to bring by showing what their peers are doing who really understand is to understand why they work in crisis, how with adjustments they could work in quote unquote normal operating times, although they're never as truly normal, and sort of what the deeper lessons that can be built on are. So COVID was certainly a real crisis. And one of the reasons command centers get stood up is because there are real crises that need, you know, rapid, effective coordination and response. But, you know, one of the points I make is that healthcare organizations really like a crisis, and everybody sort of jumps into action naturally and positively when these things occur, including for command centers. And, you know, and I make the point in the piece that part of that's because, people in healthcare love to help and love to help with urgency. And there's help is never more clearly needed than, you know, in an emergency. But the other thing that we've detected in conversations with executives and others is that part of the reason people eagerly, including from middle management, want command centers to be created is because they solve, as you said, some problems that drive them crazy during regular operations. And I refer to those a little bit in the piece as what our mentor, Paul O'Neill Sr., former CEO of Alcoa and U.S. Treasury Secretary and safety pioneer, what he used to call big organization disease, right? So unfortunately, in many of our healthcare systems, a huge distance has grown between the C-suite and the frontline, right? It's a pretty long distance. And a lot of times people closer to the frontline feel like a little disassociated from what leaders are doing. And there's an assumption that they're in meetings all day and not really connected to the work. And what crisis operations do for those layers, one of the positive things they do is connect everybody around, you know, understanding closer to the front line what's actually happening, raising problems that need resolution quickly, faster decision making, and, you know, faster transmission of those decisions to the front line. So, you know, we've seen a number of middle managers be eager to get into command center mode. And one place where we have great connections, you know, they've done it four times since the start of the crisis. But it's because, you know, the problems that they feel are ingrained forever and they can't get answers to are actually answered fairly quickly in command center mode. The other thing about command centers that can be positive in a crisis mode versus sort of, you know, other elements of this big organization disease is in you know, what become big corporate bureaucratized health systems or any other big corporate bureaucracy, control of information in fiefdoms can become a problem. So people are not openly sharing, but instead want to be the ones with the answers, with the key information, et cetera. Well, when we're in a crisis and when we're in command center mode, that gets a lot harder to do, right? Everything is more in the open. There's more transparency. You know, there are more perspectives in the room, et cetera. And so leading not by fiefdom, but by collaborative work around rapid experiments and shared learning is more possible. So these are, you know, long-winded answer to your question, but there are certain aspects of command centers that combat some of these tendencies of large organizations.
So Ken, from what you're saying, is it fair to say that in some ways the command center mode is a prescription that might be indicated at some times, but with many prescriptions, it may cause side effects, or if we're on the prescription too long, it can cause problems. Yeah. Is that a reasonable analogy?
Yes. So a very creative analogy, Mark, and I think it's an apt one. And yes, so if we don't adjust the prescription, if we don't understand why it worked in that crisis, but what more is required to make it sustainable, it could cause harm. And it won't be sustainable, right? So what we have happening now, to your point, is exhaustion. People are exhausted up and down and across the board, right? One of the reasons why it's not the right prescription for every time is a lot of the problem solving that happens under command centers are still workarounds. They're not really getting at the root of the problem. We're dealing with what we view as the crisis of the day or the key decision to be made quickly, but we're not really taking out the source of the problem in the system often. So we're coping, but we're not really making things better in a sustainable way. The other thing that we see happening is that the command center is, you know, while I said middle management like getting their questions answered, it is still a top-down decision-making environment, right? And so in many quarters, and I've gotten reports from this from many upper-level leaders and mid-level leaders, the top executives sort of like the feeling of control that may have come through this, you know, greater visibility to decisions, faster execution, et cetera, while those underneath them are deeply missing the collaborative structured input and the problems being solved at the level at which they're occurring with the right guidance from above. So unchecked, as you said, the prescription at the wrong moment, especially if leaders are insensitive to inner value for control, it can lead to some bad things. So we have seen some of those bad things starting to crop up around command centers that have not been altered for too long. You know, and I'll just give a couple examples. So one team we observed spent about 3 weeks trying to plan a small adjustment to the structure of the management system and the health system in a conference room, arguing about what should happen without testing anything at all, without getting out of the conference room and trying to test anything. So there was no real learning possible, and it was 3 weeks of wasted time. In another place, a team spent 3 days putting together a PowerPoint that they had to present to senior management to have it perfect, to have all the answers, et cetera, you know, rather than focusing on the work and with visual management to tell us what we were and experiments designed that could be relayed quickly and something, you know, very different. And if leaders look around their organizations and ask the right questions, they may see some of these, you know, either leftover types of challenges or growing challenges because of some of the characteristics of a command center that seemed awfully good, but you know, may be wearing thin.
Now, and there's a lot of depth, you know, in the blog post, so I invite people to go and check that out. I'll link to that in the show notes, or you can also find it by going to valuecapturellc.com/blog. I've talked to organizations here in the past year who fired up the command center, but then also combined it with really good staff-driven continuous improvement.
Yes.
Of recognizing and trying to find a balance maybe of when there's a need for a quote-unquote command decision, but not falling to that playbook every single time of how trying to figure out how these modes of improvement can coexist of being in crisis mode, but not being completely top down.
Yeah.
What are some of your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, Mark, it's great to hear. And at the places that were further advanced in empowering everyone as problem solvers, they naturally attempted to structure things that way, right? Because they did not want to do violence, if you will, to the capabilities and the empowerment that they had built, but they recognized that there was even faster decision-making required. So, you know, a big part of what I try to do in the blog post is help everyone realize that the right way to think about it, the transition from the current command center environment is toward the direction you're talking about. And so, for example, a couple of things I point to as ways to do that are, you know, stop thinking about our command center as our crisis center and sort of switch it to become sort of the visual management center for the top priorities of the organization every day, sort of the top of the cascaded management system. To retain the rapid information flow up and down and across the organization every day, but to add some of the capability you just talked about, right? So we don't want it to be all, in fact, we want less decisions having to be made at the top, and we want more of it to be about the flow of problem solving and barriers that need to be broken from below up, and the leaders breaking barriers and coaching down. And what that really requires is sort of deliberately building in more of a focus on problem solving by the people closest to the work, by the appropriate levels of what we call the help chain, which is just the management chain. And also the coaching required to do it. So that means, you know, taking our templates for how information flows into the management system structure or the command center, if that's what you started with, and really gearing them toward the questions of, are we getting to the root of the problem? Are we solving it? And what experiment are we running and bringing back information on the next day And how is that going to be shared? And then leaders continually thinking about strengthening the system for doing that. And the coaching part of that is really key too. And, you know, if your first foray in this direction, the direction that Mark alluded to and I read about in the piece, has been through your command center experience, it's this idea of leaders as coaches. And again, it's the need for the top leaders to shift from, you know, quick deciders, you know, of the stuff that floats up to them, to be the coaches that ask the right questions about the problem solving and where it's occurring and its depth and how it's being shared, et cetera. So it's a question of, if you will, shifting the templates, shifting our own behaviors to shift the mindsets across the whole organization and end up with a much stronger and more sustainable system.
Yeah, because I mean, there would be a difference between giving a command that says, here, go do this thing, yeah, as opposed to, let's say, a direction, we could call it a command, yeah, saying, here's a critical time-sensitive problem. We need to solve it now. Please go figure out an experiment.
Yes, exactly.
That's a very different style, yeah, of leadership, and there could be some element of crisis and time sensitivity, and as a leader, I know what the direction needs to be. I think that's, yeah, valid. That doesn't mean you need to have the complete, right, perfect solution. Knowing the answer versus figuring it out through,
right,
experimentation.
Right.
We'd rather, right, see that that, right, rapid cycle test, yeah, of change is what, right, we would advocate for.
And Mark, I want to validate what you just said too, because I think it points to another way that command centers have been very effective in most places that again talks to that balance between what leaders do and what leaders empower others to do. So command centers were really impactful in getting alignment around the big goals that had to happen, right? And so, you know, one example that everybody's familiar with in healthcare from early in the pandemic was standing up telehealth, remote health capabilities within just a week or two in most places that had been sort of burbling around for several years before, right? And in generally fairly immature states of development. And by having this structure to rapidly align and meeting, you know, both to care for patients and all safely and economically, you know, economic survival for the health systems, these things got stood up with rapid experiments, you know, within a couple of weeks. And a lot of CEOs I've talked to are kind of amazed by that still. But we know, to your point, that command center or visual management system that sort of crests in the peak of a visual management center, what the crisis command center can become, one of their key features can be leaders driving the alignment around the few most important things and the power of people working rapidly in experiments to get those things done versus where most of our health systems have unfortunately been for decades of having literally 150 priorities, each of which is, you know, said to be just as important effectively by behavior to the middle managers and really struggling to track and make breakthroughs. But the function of leaders to cause the alignment occur around this is the next most important thing or next one or two or three things, and realizing the power of how much faster you can go with that alignment, and to your point, the experimental mindset is really remarkable. And so, you know, in the blog post, I point to that. Don't let go of that naming the big dot things that have to happen. Now, that's not a thing that should be, you know, just discussed by, determined by fiat all the time. There should be, you know, sensitivity and exchanges within the organization as well as the outside world. But ultimately, the leaders need to be the ones to decide the biggest goals and align everybody behind it. And the crisis centers transformed into visual management centers need to embrace that as a core lesson that doesn't, you know, it's not just we stand up telehealth in 2 weeks in a crisis. We can stand up telehealth in the next five things, all of them in 2 weeks, you know, in normal operations by that singular focus working together, et cetera.
Well, thank you, Ken, for all those thoughts. And again, the blog post, you know, it's really takes a deep dive into, it's kind of, you know, rich topic. There's a lot of nuance around command centers and different approaches. So again, I'll invite people to go check out the blog post. You can find that in the show notes. And let me just recap again, the webinar. So when this episode is over, go run right to the registration page, maybe. I mean, if you're listening to this while you're driving, don't do that, of course. But go to valuecapturellc.com/webinars. Again, that webinar is going to be held on Thursday, May 27th, 11 Eastern. Habitual excellence starts with safety before, during, and after a crisis. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to what Missy and Mike have to share. So Ken, thank you for giving us a bit of a preview of that and your blog post today.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Looking forward to the webinar as well. And thanks for the opportunity to talk about the blog post and the subject. I think it's an important one. We've got a lot of opportunity to build on what's best of the last year together with what's hardest and make some enduring changes for the better.
Sure. That's very true. So thanks. Thanks again, Ken. Thanks for listening to Habitual Excellence presented by Value Capture. We hope you'll subscribe to the podcast and please also rate and review it in your favorite podcast directory or app. To learn more about Value Capture and how we can help your organization on this journey to habitual excellence, visit our website at www.valuecapturellc.com.